All right, so today we're going to be doing a deep dive into a particularly juicy case, I think you'll agree.
Yeah.
Ottavian v. Konica Minolta. And, this is a case that I think a lot of our listeners will find really interesting because it deals with, the idea of how smaller companies can protect their really innovative ideas when they're dealing with these huge, much larger companies,
That's
right?
right. Absolutely.
So, I'm excited to really dig into this with you.
It's a master class in trade secret misappropriation. And one of the things that's so important about it, I think, for anyone who's interested in IP, is that it really gets at this fundamental challenge for companies, which is how can you collaborate? How can you put yourself out there, explore deals, explore partnerships, and all the rest of it without exposing yourself and your kind of secret sauce, right?
Exactly. And for our listeners who are studying law, I think that this case offers a really unique insight, right? Because it demonstrates that even if every individual piece of an invention is already sort of out there and known, the unique way that those pieces are combined and integrated can still be protectable as a trade secret.
Yeah.
So let's unpack this, right? What was Ottavian's big innovation here?
So Ottavian, they developed what they call digital stamping technology, or DST. And this was essentially a way to create self-authenticating documents using these encrypted barcodes, right? So you can imagine like a document, like a certificate or a transcript or something like that. That had this technology embedded in it. So you could very quickly verify if it was the genuine article or whether it had been tampered with in some way. And so this was Ottavian's, sort of, innovative technology.
And then on the other side, we have Konica Minolta System Laboratory, Inc.,
Right.
or KMSL. I think a lot of our listeners will know that they are a pretty big player in the printer manufacturing world.
Absolutely, one of the major players. Yeah.
And so it makes sense, right? They saw the potential in Ottavian's DST to really enhance their own product offerings. So
Yeah.
they started talking,
Yeah,
right?
exactly. So, you've got this sort of classic situation of like a, bigger company looking to kind of, incorporate some novel technology from a smaller, more nimble player. And so they entered into negotiations to explore that. And crucially, these discussions were governed by a non-disclosure agreement, an NDA, which, as you know, is pretty standard practice when you have these sorts of sensitive discussions. You're
Of
going to
course.
want to protect that information that's being exchanged.
And I imagine during these conversations, Ottavian really did share the specifics of their DST, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you can imagine that they had to go into a fair amount of detail, right, for KMSL to really understand, that the technology, how it might work, how it might integrate with their products and all of that.
Of course.
So yeah, there's a lot of back and forth.
And so here's where things I think take a really interesting turn, right?
Indeed.
The deal ultimately falls apart. It doesn't go through.
Yep.
But later on, Ottavian finds out that KMSL has actually filed several patents that seem to use many of the same DST concepts that Ottavian had shared during those earlier confidential discussions.
Right.
So this is the alleged misappropriation that sparked the whole legal battle.
That's right. Yeah.
And what did Ottavian do?
Well, they sued, and their legal claims actually included both a breach of the NDA, we talked about earlier, and a misappropriation of trade secrets.
Now, this is really interesting, right? What happened?
Well, the initial trial court actually dismissed Ottavian's claim for breach of the NDA, but they did find in favor of Ottavian on the trade secret misappropriation claim against KMSL. So, this split decision really sort of highlights, I think, the distinct nature of different forms of IP protection, right? And how the legal analysis can differ, depending on the type of protection that's at issue.
Okay, so let's really unpack this trade secret aspect here. So for our listeners who are studying law, what exactly, legally speaking, defines a trade secret? I know I'm looking at my notes here. We see the phrase reasonable efforts,
Right.
which implies that we're dealing with something very similar to the UTSA framework, right? The Uniform Trade Secrets Act.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, the elements that we're talking about here align very closely with the UTSA, which is pretty widely adopted in the US. And so under that framework, a trade secret, it has a few sort of key characteristics. One is, it has to be secret, right? So it can't be something that's generally known or that's easily discoverable by others. Second is, it has to have some economic value because of its secrecy,
right?
Right? It gives its owner some sort of competitive edge in the marketplace.
Right, right.
And then third, and this is important, the owner has to have taken some reasonable steps to keep it secret.
Okay.
Right, so it's not enough to just have something valuable.
Yeah.
You have to be actively trying to protect it.
And this is where that combination of elements doctrine, I think, is really important, right? So even if individual components of an invention, let's say, are already kind of out there in the world, are known, the very specific way that those things are combined and integrated, the way that you put those pieces together to create a unique solution that can still be protected as a trade secret.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's not just about coming up with, you know, a brand new element
right.
that no one's ever seen before. It's about, you know, it's kind of like, you know, taking existing ingredients and putting them together in a new and unique way
right.
to create something special, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's the recipe.
It's the recipe, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So how did this apply in the Altavian case? How did the court look at their DST and how did they see that as a trade secret, even though that NDA claim was dismissed?
Yeah, so the court, you know, they kind of looked at the DST as a whole.
Yeah.
Right? They focused on how all the different pieces work together.
Okay.
To achieve that secure document authentication.
Mm-hmm.
And they determined that even if, you know, maybe certain encryption techniques or barcode technologies were known, the specific way that Altavian had integrated those things,
right.
you know, in its particular system, that was novel.
Yeah.
That was valuable,
yeah.
right?
Okay.
And, you know, interestingly, in this case, some internal communications within KMSL actually played a pretty big role.
Right.
Because it came out that KMSL's own employees had acknowledged, you know, the novelty and the unique aspects of what Altavian had developed. So that suggested, you know, that they weren't just independently coming up with the same thing, right?
Yeah.
There was something unique about what Altavian had done.
Okay. So they said Altavian's DST does meet the legal criteria for a trade secret. So then what happens next? What about damages? How did the court figure out what Altavian should be awarded?
Right. So that's the next step, right?
Right.
You know, once you establish misappropriation, you got to figure out, well, okay, what are the damages here?
Yeah.
How do we make the plaintiff whole? And in this case, the court awarded Altavian $1 million
uh-huh.
based on what's called a reasonable royalty.
Okay, so now explain it like I'm five. What is a reasonable royalty? Why didn't they say something like, you know, lost profits?
Well, in trade secret cases,
huh?
And especially when you're dealing with a company like Altavian who, you know, maybe hadn't fully commercialized their invention yet, proving, you know, what profits they lost can be really hard.
Oh, okay.
Right? Like, like how do you put a number on that?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So a reasonable royalty is kind of an attempt to figure out what would a fair licensing fee have been if these two companies had actually gotten together.
Right, right.
And agreed, you know, that KMSL could use the technology.
Right, like a hypothetical negotiation.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Cool.
You know, what would they have agreed to?
Makes sense.
And that's how they came up with $1 million.
Yeah, but that wasn't the end of the story, right? There were other costs too.
Yeah, absolutely. So in addition to $1 million in damages, mm-hmm. the court also awarded Altavian over $500,000.
Okay.
In what's called prejudgment interest.
Prejudgment interest. What is that?
So prejudgment interest is basically, it's meant to compensate the plaintiff for the time value of money.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so they were deprived of the use or the benefit of their trade secret
yeah.
for all that time.
Right. Of course.
Before the court made a decision.
Yeah.
And so this prejudgment interest is meant to kind of account for that.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then on top of all that, KMSL was also ordered to pay almost $3.3 million in attorney fees and costs.
Wow.
Right. So this really drives home, I think, the point that trade secret litigation can be very expensive.
Yeah.
Right? It's not just about the value of the secret itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the cost of fighting it out in court.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you know, companies need to be very aware of that.
So I imagine KMSL appealed this, right?
Oh yeah, they appealed it.
Yeah.
And you know, their main argument on appeal was that, you know, ideas and design concepts shouldn't be protectable as trade secrets.
Right, okay.
Right, that essentially what Altavian had disclosed wasn't concrete enough.
Yeah.
It wasn't, you know, specific enough to really qualify as a trade secret. under the law.
Yeah.
Okay, so what did the appeals court say?
Well, the appeals court was not persuaded. Yeah. They upheld the trial court's ruling and you know, really rejected KMSL's argument.
Okay.
They made it clear that combinations of ideas can be protected as trade secrets as long as, you know, they meet those criteria that we talked about earlier of secrecy and value.
So this was a big win for Altavian.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It really, really solidified the scope of protection for this type of intellectual property.
Okay, so bringing this back to our listeners, you know, particularly those who are in law school and who are kind of trying to figure out all the intricacies of intellectual property law, what are the main takeaways from the Altavian case?
Well, you know, I think for startups and smaller companies out there, you know, those that are really driving innovation, I think this case just, you know, really underscores the importance of being very careful about documenting your efforts to maintain secrecy.
Okay.
Right. So that means, you know, consistently using NDAs,
right,
clearly marking information as confidential, you know, restricting access to key details on a need to know basis.
Yeah.
You know, really thinking about how you can best protect your secret sauce.
Yeah. And I imagine for larger companies, there's a message here for them too, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, for larger companies, the message is you got to respect those NDAs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
you got to be very mindful of the potential consequences of misappropriating information that was shared in those types of discussions.
Yeah, because it could cost them a lot, literally.
Yeah, it could be extremely costly.
Yeah.
Both in terms of, you know, the damages that you might have to pay out, but also the reputational damage that can come with this sort of behavior.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I think it's a really important reminder.
So I think one of the things that I found so interesting about this case was that, you know, it reminds us that trade secrets can be so much more than just, you know, some closely guarded formula or a really complex algorithm.
Right? Yeah, exactly. It's really about, you know, the way that you put things together, the unique combination of ideas that gives you that edge in the marketplace.
So I think at the end of the day, you know, the Altavian case really shows the breadth and the power of this type of protection under the law.
Absolutely.
You know, even if the individual parts of something are already known, the unique way that you put them together can be your secret.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah.
And you know, for those of you out there who are, you know, future lawyers, you know, studying IP law.
Yeah.
You know, really understanding the nuances of trade secret law and particularly this combination of elements doctrine, I think it's just so crucial because you know, these are the kinds of cases that you're going to see in practice.
Absolutely.
And you need to be able to analyze these issues and to advise your clients.
Yeah. And this was a great case to use as a real world example to really see this in action.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So here's a final thought for our listeners as you continue to explore the world of intellectual property law. You know, how can both startups and really large companies really navigate this complex world of protecting their own IP while also making sure that they respect the IP rights of others?
Right.
It's a fascinating area and one that I think will continue to become even more important as we move forward.
Absolutely.
So until next time.